You're listening to Good Food on KCRW. I'm Evan Kleiman. Water is power, and nowhere more so than in California's Central Valley, which produces 250 crops valued at $17 billion. Journalist Mark Arox returns to discuss the current lay of the land, literally. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Good. Really good to be with you, Evan.
Oh, it's just always so great to have you back to talk about this stuff. There are so many different ways of discussing water in California. So let's focus on Corcoran. Where is the Corcoran Bowl and how much area does it cover?
So you're talking about a place called the Tulare Lake Basin, and it is in the southern end of the San Joaquin Valley, which is connected to the Sacramento Valley, which makes the Great Central Valley. So we're talking about one of the great valleys in the world, and as you said, probably the most prolific producer of agricultural crops, certainly in the nation and perhaps in the world as well. So down in the southern end, the Tulare Lake Basin was defined by Tulare Lake, which was a lake that went back probably 8,000-10,000 years, or, you know, or at least 1,000. And it was a lake of the indigenous tribes here, the Yokuts. And it was the most dominant feature on the California map. At its height, it was about 800 square miles, way bigger than Lake Tahoe, the biggest body of fresh water west of the Mississippi. And the Yokuts fished along its shore. It was a shallow lake. The women were able to fish mussels with their toes just by walking the bottom. The men had these tule rafts, these rafts made of bulrushes, and they would have holes in them and they'd spear fish. So this was the terminus for four rivers that came out of the Sierra and ran across the middle of California. These rivers did not connect and go out to the Pacific Ocean. Their endpoint was Tulare Lake. And at some point after the gold rush, those miners became farmers and others came here, and they started claiming the flow of the rivers, diverting those rivers away from the lake, and it started to dry up. And then when the dams went in the 1940s, it dried up for good. But every so often, in a heavy snowmelt and rain year, in spite of all the contrivances of man, dams, ditches, levees, canals, pumps that make the rivers run backward, in spite of all that, the water comes back and fills up Tulare Lake. And that is what's happened this winter and spring.
So to give us an idea of how full it is and how much landmass it's taking up again and how intrusive its presence is, give us an idea of all that.
So it's nowhere near the Lake of Lore, okay? It's about 100 square miles, and it's growing because the biggest snow melt is just coming down now. We had a fairly mild spring, but now we're getting in the 90s and the 100s here. And with those temperatures, the snow melt's going to come all at once, and no one knows how big the lake's going to get. But speculation is, and science kind of shows, that the lake will come back in a bigger fashion than it did in 1997, in a bigger fashion than it did in 1983 and 1969. So this may be the lake at a height that we haven't seen in a century and a half.
So let's talk for a minute about the other thing that Corcoran is really famous for, and that is the subsidence.
Yes.
Describe subsidence and how it's affected this town and this area.
So let me give just a tad bit of history that'll lead right to that. In 1920, these farmers from the South, led by Colonel J.G. Boswell, they were plantation owners, slave owners. They came west. He came west, J.G. Boswell, because he was working for Goodyear Tire, and tires had cotton in them. And he decided that he just didn't want to broker cotton. He wanted to grow it. So he started growing it in the Tulare Lake bottom. They took control of 15% of the Kings River and was able to use that in dry years and then try to keep it away in flood years. So this became one of the most engineered landscapes in all of America. I mean, they flattened it. They dewatered the lake, and the Army Corps declared the lake bottom a flood zone, as crazy as that sounds. And so they planted cotton and cotton and cotton, and then later on tomatoes and other things, but it was always annual crops. Well, the new farmers here, wanting to extract even more out of this land, have now planted permanent crops, almonds, pistachios, and if you can believe it, mega dairies are actually down on the lake bottom. And this has brought a whole new level, a whole new magnitude of kind of industrial agriculture. So in other words, they not only dried the lake and took the flow of its rivers, but now because of the industrialization further of this land, they're now going to the lake beneath the ground and sucking that dry with these pumps and wells that reach 2,000, 2,500 feet into the ground. I mean, these are many Empire State Buildings on top of each other. And they're pumping from the depths below the Corcoran clay. And as they're pumping out the water, and the land is sinking. As the clay sinks, the land sinks with it. And so you have subsidence that's 10, 15 feet. And obviously this is imperiling the whole infrastructure down there, the levees that protect the towns. The water is now moving in a way that it didn't move in past floods, all because the geology, the topography has been altered by extraction.
Are there any legal measures? Have there been any government oversight to reduce the pumping of groundwater?
The state of California has something called SGMA, the Sustainable Groundwater Act. And it's supposed to basically limit this kind of pumping. But when they passed it, it had such a long run-up, 25 years. The state should have probably come in and told Boswell to stop pumping from those depths. And they haven't. And so, no, this is kind of a no-man's land down there. These big farmers have run it as their own domain for a century and more.
What other companies besides Boswell are really large drawers of the water?
Boswell is the principal one. I mean, they bought out their chief rival, the Salyers, you know, about 25 years ago. You have some other longtime farmers, the Gilkeys, the Hansons, but they're kind of victims of what's happened here. They're getting flooded out, and Boswell has stayed dry enough to plant a whole tomato crop. Now, whether that or not that crop survives the rest of this snow melt, it's anyone's guess. And then you have in that lake bottom and around it, you have these hedge funds and pension funds from all over the country coming there. I mean, John Hancock has planted pistachios in and around there. It's a free-for-all down there when it comes to pumping and water. And, you know, this is a flood year, but we just come through essentially 10 years of historic drought.
So when, you know, when regular people who don't know a lot about water in California hear about a drought cycle, and then they see all this rain and they see the huge amount of snow in the Sierras and they read the stories about the snowmelt, a lot of people think, well, great, it's just going to seep into the ground and it will replenish all of these underground lakes, these aquifers. Is that what's going to happen?
It will. I mean, we count on flood years to recharge that aquifer. The problem is, as subsidence happens, it collapses the land, and its ability to soak, like sponge, soak up that water is lost. We just can't recharge the aquifer the way we used to. But you'd have to have successive flood years to make up for the deficit that we now have. You know, and it's, you know, we've been over pumping for a century, and that water that used to be within 5-10 feet of the surface is now hundreds of feet below.
Will there be some farmers in the area who will basically have to give up their land to water for the foreseeable future? They won't be able to plant anymore, that the lake will have just taken up residence once again?
Yes. You're looking at a couple years probably before it fully dries out. But they have these pumps that are able to move water to these cells of land outside the basin, and they can move it. They're very efficient at moving. And then, you know, there's crop insurance and things like that. So what we have here is something very fascinating. We have the descendants of the Yokuts and other indigenous are kind of rooting for this lake to come back, and it has. And then you have these communities on the periphery, some of them people of color, who are caught between. Part of them is rooting for the lake to come back. They love to see nature trump all this this industrial agriculture, but at the same time, they worry about their communities. And then you have farmers down there who are fighting like hell to keep water off. So this is one of the great dramas of California. You know, you have a piece of history coming back, a ghost, a phantom, we've called it. But really, the lake has never lost its memory for that place. It knows where to land.
Do you think that there's going to be ripple effects that will be felt in the nation's food supply?
I don't think so. There's a lot of cotton down there. Now, you know, we do produce some, you know, quite a bit of the nation's tomatoes, but, you know, cotton already is a surplus crop. So no, I don't see it affecting that so much. I think farm workers are affected down there, although this is a highly industrialized kind of agriculture. It doesn't employ a lot of pickers and packers.
I really hope the community water of these towns isn't affected.
Well, what they're talking about now is that maybe we ought to retire some of this lake bottom and let the water find itself. And that way it takes flood pressure off of other places. So you retire the land and then you just allow those waters to come when they in the heavy snowmelt years, and you return it to something of what it was. You know, we've allowed the Sacramento River to find some of its old flood plain. It's made sense. It's been healthier for fish. And maybe there's an argument to be made, I think a strong argument, that Tulare Lake, at least a part of it, ought to come back.
As always, Mark, it's always a pleasure to talk to you about these things. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for letting me go on and on, Evan. I really appreciate it.
That's award-winning journalist and California Native son, Mark Arax. We've been discussing the current state of water affairs in the Central Valley. Mark's book, The Dreamt Land, Chasing Water and Dust Across California, is just an amazing read. It's now available in paperback.